Hey listeners, if you're working on a manuscript, we'd love to help. Email us about our novel mentorship program at napleswritersworkshop@gmail.com. Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine, and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, tell us about the story that you chose.
I selected the story Say Yes by Tobias Wolff. They were doing the dishes, his wife washing, while he dried. He'd washed the night before. Unlike most men he knew, he really pitched in on the housework. A few months earlier, he'd overheard a friend of his wife's congratulate her on having such a considerate husband, and he thought, I try. Helping out with the dishes was a way of showing how considerate he was. They talked about different things and somehow got on the subject of whether white people should marry black people. He said that all things considered, he thought it was a bad idea. Why? She asked. Sometimes his wife got this look where she pinched her brows together and bit her lower lip and stared down at something. When he saw her like this, he knew he should keep his mouth shut, but he never did. Actually, it made him talk more. She had that look now. Why? She asked again and stood there with her hand inside a bowl, not washing it, but just holding it above the water.
So was Tobias Wolff, was he the first story that we ever read on the podcast?
No,
it was Lauren Groff. But he was one of like the first three, right?
Yes. He's the one that Rob picked for that first trio of stories.
Okay. Bullet in the Brain.
Bullet in the Brain, yeah. And I was like, we got to go back to Tobias Wolff. We reference Bullet in the Brain so often. And I was like, I want to see what else he's written. And this book happens to have Bullet in the Brain and Say Yes. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Made it easy on you. So had you read this before then? No.
No, I somehow just didn't read it. I read it before I sent it over, but
I
always do because I want to make sure I have something to say about it.
Yeah, right.
Or that it's any good, you know.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised that for as often as we do talk about that Bullet in the Brain story, that we hadn't revisited him or that I hadn't even bothered personally to go like read everything else. Sometimes I think it's safe to assume that whatever story you really like from someone, that might be your favorite one. Like you don't need to go ruining it by reading their whole catalog.
Sometimes,
sometimes it's like, no, you actually stumbled upon the best work. You don't like the author, you like the story. Yeah, but this one was interesting. This one was obviously totally different than Bullet in the Brain, which we talk about all the time because it's what happens as the bullet's whizzing into his brain that we're just like obsessed with, right?
Yeah, because it's an interesting setup the way it's put together. This is more traditionally structured.
Yeah.
In that it's like a narrative, it's linear, all this stuff. It's not a series of negations, right?
Yeah. If there's anything similar, I think it's that our main character is sort of unlikable. He seems to have nailed writing unlikable men. He goes out of his way a few times in the story to kind of mention what a great guy he is, you know, or how hard he tries not to be a jerk, which I think is different than being a good guy. Proving that you're not a bad guy is different than actually just being a good guy. And then he happens to have this unpopular opinion that, well, it could be popular, but he happens to have this controversial opinion.
It's controversial in the household.
Yeah, it's controversial in their home, and he kind of knows that it's gonna bother his wife, but I think he is willing to have the conversation because it doesn't seem relevant to him, you know? He seems to be of the mind that he can discuss this and no one gets offended because neither of them is black and because they're already married and in love. So what does it matter that they would talk about other people's potential marriages?
Well, he's trying to get out of this conversation this whole
time. Yeah, at first.
He's like, no, come on. You're going to bring this up again? You accidentally stabbed yourself. I thought that was the end of it.
Yeah. I think he's just kind of like, what is there to discuss? Because it doesn't apply to us. This is just
we disagree, like, and it has no bearing on anything that we have to concern ourselves with.
Right. And she's very much like, I need to know where your head is at on this because it has a lot of bearing. Maybe not on our specific circumstances, but on how I see you as a person and how apparently you might see me.
We don't get in her head, so we don't know exactly, but she seems to believe it has bearing on their specific circumstances because she's looking at the alternatives. She's like, the what ifs, like, what if this?
Right.
How do I know how you really feel if, basically she's like, how do you really feel about me if I pushed you? Like if I pushed you to some hypothetical or some extreme or in some extremis, what would your feelings be?
Yeah. So she finally gets him in a corner and gets him to admit, like gun to his head, would you marry me if I were black? And he's like, all right, no, I wouldn't. And he kind of lays out the bare bones of his argument because like you said, he's trying to sort of like avoid it the whole time. So he hasn't come prepared to have this argument necessarily. He's just like, this is my my gut reaction.
He's applying like the social, like his kind of knee-jerk reaction to the social conversation, the larger cultural conversation. He's like, no, I agree with, I don't know that it's a good idea. And he just has this knee-jerk reaction to it. And then he's like, I guess if I follow what I think, then you're pointing out that I'd have to say no. And then she keeps pushing him. And he's like, eventually, he's like, all right, fine. He like has to start digging into himself, because that's what most of the story is him considering his present situation with his wife and how much he actually does appreciate their life. And so then he's forced to like consider what if, or he was trying to get away from it before.
Right.
It's really quick though.
Oh yeah.
I guess the thing that I find very interesting is it's such a simple frame. It doesn't go into any depth of history. There's a couple of like, oh, her friend thought I was a good husband. You know, I like that. But that's like as far as we get of quote unquote backstory. There's no real backstory. It's all in the moment. And his ruminations are in the present. They do touch on history, but they don't go into history, if that makes sense.
Right.
And so it's got a depth of character in a very quick space without going into history. It's not like that Raymond Carver story we did recently, A Small Good Thing, did that too. There was no backstory in that either. It was all what's happening in the moment.
Which one was that again?
The one with the baker who was making the cake.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, when you're mentioning like that, there's not a ton of like backstory on these two. We don't have like a ton of history, but we sort of understand them. I was sort of waiting, like you said, we're not in the wife's head, but on page two at the top. She's trying to like get him to articulate his thoughts as clearly as possible so that she can sort of attack. Right? And she's like, so I guess you'd feel the same way about foreigners, like two foreigners getting married. And he's like, yeah, like how would you understand someone who comes from a completely different background? And she says, different, not the same like us. Yes, different, he snapped. And I was waiting for them to sort of articulate what that meant, because when I read it like she's trying to pin down the fact that he believes that he and his wife are similar in some sense broadly when it comes to their background and not just their race. But I was waiting for her or for him to like introduce something like class differences or education. We kind of get the sense, knowing that he thinks he's such a great husband, that I don't know that he thinks of them as equals necessarily. I thought she was trying to drive home the argument to relate to the two of them personally.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's almost like that. It's on my mind because we talked about it before we started recording with that button story where it's like, how well did you know your husband after all?
Yeah.
It's like he thinks he knows their situation very well, but she's pushing him to say, do you really know what's happening over on this side? Do you really know what's happening between us?
Yeah. She's like, oh, you think that you and I are on like equal playing field, like totally. You think we're match made in heaven because we come from the same XYZ background. So either he's oblivious to it or like it doesn't matter over time or whatever. But yeah, we get the sense that for her, the differences are a lot more obvious.
It's an interesting, because it's an ordinary domestic moment that's being portrayed. And he's just exhibits just the sense of domestic comfort. He's like, this is our situation. Doesn't think too deeply about it. He just enjoys the fact that they have something together. And he's like, oh, and it's nice that her friends think I'm a good husband. And I'm going to keep doing those things that make her friends think I'm a good husband. But he's not thinking about her and what she's thinking about. It's like they settled into a comfort, but there's no depth in it, if that makes sense, which is what she's trying to point out. It's like, how well do we actually know each other? You're say that we only got married because we are very similar. We know each other very well. Whereas people from different cultures cannot know each other. But do we? Do we really?
Right. Yeah. Or are you making assumptions based on these surface level things about me that you, well, she's white like me. So in this like next paragraph, when she like does cut her hand and he like runs to go and help her. So he goes and gets like rubbing alcohol and stuff and bandages her up. And it says he hoped that she appreciated how quickly he had come to her aid. He'd acted out of concern for her with no thought of getting anything in return, but now the thought occurred to him that it would be a nice gesture on her part not to start up that conversation again, as he was tired of it. This is what I mean, first of all, by like unlikable character. He's like, look how selfless I am. I'm acting selflessly without a thought of getting anything in return. And yet he can't let it slide that he did something. He didn't do it naturally. It was this intentional act on his part, and he wants to be seen a certain way. That's the reward. The reward is to be seen a certain way. Whether or not she says thank you, or whether or not she decides to revisit this conversation, he doesn't understand what selfless acts are. And then he's like, well, you know, the least she could do is not bring this up. And then she does. And he's like, what doesn't she understand about this exchange?
There's a lot of breaking down of the difference between public and private. Like, he's performing like as if for a public, their private yes. moments. It's like, I'm going to mop the kitchen because that makes me a good husband. It's not, I'm going to mop the kitchen because it needs it. No. Or I'm going to mop the kitchen because my wife mops the kitchen enough and I should help her out or whatever it is. It's like, doing this is a performance so that people can appreciate me.
Yeah. And whether or not it's like in the moment or like down the road, like you said, like he takes pride in like other people in their lives noticing and saying things about him overall. He knows it's like a long con.
Yeah.
He's got to do this for a long time. He doesn't just get like credit for doing it the one time. So he's like sort of putting in his due.
So her motive, it's not a clear conscious motive and everything, but kind of an underlying thing seems to be she's trying to get him to focus more on the private than the public.
Yeah.
He's like, if they come from different cultures, they can't know each other. She's like, but what if they do? What if they do anyway?
And he's like, well, they can't. He's like, remember how I bandaged your hand? And I think whether or not we understand, like in the line, like I pointed out earlier, like she's like different, not the same like us. She's trying to pinpoint this down, right? And I'm reading into it, but I'm assuming that she doesn't view them as similar as he views them.
It seems to be implicit. Yeah. She's trying yeah. to suggest to him that there are more differences between us than you are acknowledging.
Right. And with that in mind, it's like he can't even understand that what she's like trying to nail down is that maybe she views him differently. Maybe the way he goes about like getting her love and attention and affection and approval is different. Like you said, the public versus private. She's like, what makes you think that we're so in tune? Because you don't even understand what it is I'm trying to like articulate in this conversation. And then we get to the end here. And the ending is, I thought it was so good. And I had to read like a little bit of criticism about it to make sure that I was like interpreting it correctly. You know,
I didn't read any criticism. My thought was, she's demonstrating to him, how well do you actually know me? Let's turn off the lights. Who's walking across the room right now?
Yeah. Like, would you recognize me?
She doesn't have to say anything. He's having that realization. He's like, oh my. It's an amazing mixture of fearful and comforting sensations, right? When he's talking about, I should look at it before I say that out loud. But yeah, because it was, his heart was hammering the way it had on the first night they were together, which is, that is an exciting moment. And it's hammering the same way as someone he doesn't know, like rummaging, like a burglar or something, right? So it's like both of those people are strangers. One of them is an exciting stranger and one of them is a terrifying stranger. So he doesn't know which it is. All he knows is that he's feeling that feeling. And she arranged for that to happen. She set that up.
Oh yeah. She tells him like a couple times, like turn the light off.
Yeah. Which is, that is a loving gesture, right? She wants to reach him. She's not trying to drive him away. She's not trying to like teach him a lesson and leave him on the side of the road. She wants him to understand. She's like, you're not getting it. Let me demonstrate this to you so that you can understand. And then he seems to be on the brink of understanding when we end this. Anyway, that's my reading. How did the critics...
they pointed this out, and I'm glad that I read it because I was like, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this as being like a story about race, given that they're both white, you know? But by the end, when tells him to like turn the light out too, like you can't tell what race she is. And she is by all accounts a black shadow. And I think that was supposed to be, when I read it, I was like, is this what they're, you know? And then there were a couple people that said they thought that was like the other half the coin here. Not just that he's uncomfortable and he's nervous and it's like the first time with someone new and it's a stranger and he's piecing all this together, but that also like echoes the race element from earlier.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, because it's, she's also pointing out not necessarily that she's not becoming black by turning off the lights, right?
No.
She's not becoming a black shadow. She's just erasing considerations yeah. of race. Like, you can only see race when the lights are on, right? He's trying to pin it to something else. And she's like, no, there's something else between us, between people in general, that you can't
right.
see when the lights are off.
Yeah. And depending on, like you said, we don't have like a ton of history on this couple. He doesn't seem like super invested in this conversation. It seems like, you know, he has an opinion on it, but he kind of regrets having brought it up at all because he really doesn't care that much. He doesn't want to keep discussing it. But I think it's one of those things that she's finding out about a man that she thought she knew. She's like, wait a second, I need to get to the bottom of this, because maybe we do not view even marriage the same way. If you're thinking that like you can take certain things about me for granted because we're the same, quote unquote. And then by the end, it's like you said, maybe she is trying to sort of hold his hand and teach him something. And I'm also reading it like she's trying to figure something out for herself.
Yeah, that's probably true. And since we don't get her point of view, it's hard to ascribe her ultimate motives or feelings, but it's probably a mixture of all that because it all comes into play.
Yeah. And I think the reason I'm so like wound up with what she's thinking is because he doesn't seem to care until that very end where he's like a little on edge.
He cares in the sense that he's like, I wish she would drop it.
Yeah.
When she has that look on her face at the beginning of the conversation, he's like, I know I should shut up, but I can't stop help myself.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go down this road, but she's forcing me. Like, because she is interested in the conversation, he feels like he has to enter into it honestly.
Right.
But he doesn't want to be honest about it because he thinks it's going to lead to not the an comfortable argument. Yeah.
Yeah.
He wants to maintain the comfortable, I'm a good husband situation.
Yeah. He also thinks he can like earn his way out of the difficult conversation by bandaging her wound. He's like, oh, perfect. Let me remind her that I'm not an actual asshole. She's upset with me right now, but this is all hypothetical.
If the wound had been worse and they had to go to the hospital or something, then the conversation would have been over.
Yeah. He like tells her like, go relax. He's like, get out of here. She's like, no. She's like, I'm totally fine. I'm nice and healthy. I can have this conversation all night. It reminds me of the hypothetical question that girls ask today. Like, if I was a worm, when do you still marry me?
Okay.
Have you heard this?
No.
It's like, it's this like, it's a, yeah, I mean, John's like, not perpetually online like I am. but girls will be like, if I was a worm, would you still marry me? And guys hate this question because it is impossible to answer. You wouldn't be a worm. How would I know you? Would I still marry you? And like, people get into full-blown arguments about it because it's ridiculous. And I think that's kind of how he feels about it, right? Like, this is purely theoretical. And she's like, actually, it teaches me a lot about you. And in a lot of ways, the only time that people are honest is when they're talking about something that they think is theoretical. It seems harmless to be like, well, no, I probably wouldn't marry you. Versus telling someone who's actually black that you just met, I am not going to marry you because you are black. I don't know that he'd be as upfront and honest about his feelings that way. But people are usually pretty honest when they don't think that it's of any consequence or that it's like serious, you know? I think she's like latched on to something because he's probably the kind of guy that in a normal situation, as concerned as he is with what people think of him, is careful not to stick his foot in his mouth, right?
I'm stuck on the worm thing.
I like what you said earlier, and maybe this is sort of in line with what my takeaway would be, that this is like a pretty quick short story. We don't go into a ton of their background, and that, like, I don't know if you called it a frame, but that's the word that's coming to mind, but the context of this being like, yeah, like a domestic evening, which is really typical. Sometimes I think we have to have settings or scenarios that are unique, but it can be a simple sort of quiet story like this where they're doing the dishes, they've already eaten, he's taking the trash out, and that's the context for this sort of mundane conversation that turns a little contentious. And even the fact that something mundane turns contentious is sort of mundane, right? Because I imagine that they're the kind of couple that gets into, this feels like a familiar sort of spat, the way he tries to back out of it. He's recognizing signs that this is getting away from him. So you get the sense that
they have conversations.
They're role-playing like this.
Yeah. They have conversations all the time. I mean, I love the way that this is introduced because sometimes I feel like, and this goes to what your kind of summary is getting at, is sometimes we feel like stories need to bring things up in like perfectly natural ways. There has to be cause and effect at every level. But this story is like the second paragraph, they talked about different things and somehow got on the subject of whether white people should marry black people. And that's what the story is. It's just brought up right at the beginning.
They're not going to sit there and like give this perfect way that they backed into it.
The word is somehow got on this topic. And the story doesn't care how they got there. Story doesn't care. It doesn't mention whether they've had this conversation 100 times. If this is like, she keeps bringing it up every night because he keeps giving the wrong answer. It's just like, it feels random. It's just, here's just one couple having one conversation one time. Let's see what happens. And you get so much out of that, that you don't need all this build up to it.
Right.
It's like, all right, here's my story. This couple's talking about race. Let's see what happens.
I also think that this story doesn't try to do anything like so profound that I was able to read this and realize that maybe like this character in the story is having some sort of like realization. It doesn't necessarily preach to me in any kind of way. It's not trying to like speak some massive universal truth. It's just kind of like he has this moment at the end where he's like, oh, wait a second. And that's enough.
Am I excited
too.
Or scared?
Yeah. And I don't know. Sometimes I think in the same way that we think that we have to expertly introduce a concept we've come up with, we also think that it has to pay off in some sort of like big way, that the best payoffs are these big, big payoffs. And this one is just kind of like a quiet payoff too.
That's just because it's exactly what you were saying. It's not about all of society. It's not going to give us the answer that we need to carry forward. This story is about one guy having a conversation with his wife. We don't get to know much about his wife or her point of view, except as she pushes against his point of view. She's like the obstacle for him. And that's all we get to know about her. And so the story is going to stay quiet as long as it stays with him, which is what a well-mannered story should do, is you introduce him, you introduce the conversation that he's about to have, the topic, and then you see what he does with it. And as long as it's just what he does with it, it's going to stay quiet and ruminative that way. And it's not going to give us answers, like some kind of grand answer, because it's not looking for grand answers. It's just looking for him.
Right.
I think that's probably, I didn't have this as my takeaway, but that's probably a takeaway that someone could take from something like this. It's like, you don't need your story to reach for big, tall things. Just keep it with your characters. Keep it on the ground.
Yeah. And then, like I said, like similarly, mine would just be like, give yourself permission to just have a sort of smaller story. I feel like I sometimes do this. I sometimes think, oh, I have this idea for a piece, and unless it's going to change the world, maybe it's not worth writing. It's just not true. Like, whatever you're curious about or sort of like personally interested in, especially when it comes to short stories, it's like the perfect format to explore some of these ideas with. It might be a disappointing read to invest several hours over the course of several days and read a 350-page novel where the concept is as quiet and not meant to be universal. But this is a 4-page story, and we're learning a lot about people, and
I mean,
it's interesting.
Fiction is, we keep being told that fiction is good for empathy. That is, people who read have better empathy. And one of the reasons is because fiction is concerned with people. It's concerned with characters. And as long as we get to watch a character do something, we learn to empathize. We can point out all his flaws and how questionable his points of view are, but we don't have to hate him. We
right,
can empathize
yeah.
with where he is. And the fact that he's being confronted, like his wife is confronting him. And it's like, this is good. This is what we want.
Yeah. To that point, I started out by saying that what seems similar to Bullet in the Brain is that in that story, it's, you know, the guy gets shot. And at first you almost wonder if he deserves it because he's being the loudest, most annoying person in the bank line. Yeah. He's like, what the hell's taking so long? And they're like, listen, mister. And it's only in like hearing sort of his backstory when he's already dead. It's like reading an obituary and feeling like you're being introduced to someone really cool. And then you remind yourself like what it is you're reading.
That little kid playing baseball.
Yeah.
That's who he is.
Yeah. Even in that story with a relatively unlikable narrator and main character, we don't hate him. And I don't hate this character either. I'm annoyed by him, you know, like because his flaws are pretty obvious. He's articulating his own flaws.
Do what his wife is doing to him and like make him think about things.
Yeah. He's like, I'm a good husband and everybody knows that. And you're like, oh, shut up.
That's part of what my takeaway is actually is like, I mentioned how in the very beginning, it's like they somehow got on the subject, but the paragraph that precedes that is him. Like they were doing the dishes, his wife washing while he dried. He'd washed the night before. Unlike most men he knew, he really pitched in on the housework. He'd overheard a friend. So that is the first paragraph. That's the scene that we're introduced to first. And that's the power position, right? That's the main issue. The second paragraph brings up the conversation they're having about whether white people should marry black people. But the main topic of the story is he thinks he's a great husband.
Yeah.
Because he overheard his wife's friends say something about that and he's internalized this. And so I like that the story introduces that as the main thing in the first paragraph, brings in the kind of like topic. That is the underlying issue. And now we're going to force him to talk to his wife about whether black people should marry white people. And we'll see what happens. But just beginning a story by giving us the pieces that you need in such a succinct, clear way, and then letting it go from there. And you don't need to reach for more pieces as you go. Like you have those pieces and those are everything that's going to happen. That is such a powerful way to shape a story, I think. If you can find a way to introduce those things right on the first page so that the rest of the story is just kind of following through with the implications.
Yeah, right.
That's a good story. story. That's a well-structured story.
Yeah.
That's my takeaway.
I wrote a short story like for the first time in forever and shared it with my workshop, and I wrote that missive about it this week. But this is giving me like a lot to think about, because I think I tend to want to write these kinds of quieter stories where everything's just on the page. You don't have to think too big. And I don't want to like try to make proclamations about like the world all the time, because it's exhausting to even think about doing it. But I like how what I'm taking away from this right now too is sort of what you said, just like getting into it so quickly and having all the pieces right there. And then it's just, okay, I've introduced it. You're not going to discover much more about what it is I'm getting after. We're just going to start. And that's kind of nice too. I think sometimes depending on like the length of a story or how much you want to accomplish with it, you feel like you have to slowly introduce your concepts, but that's not always the case. Sometimes a story can be just as exciting to like discover when you are sort of explicitly told what it's about.
Yeah. I mean, it works very well because this is a simple singular story.
Yeah.
It's a bracketed story. It's like all enclosed and there's not a lot that needs to be introduced. And I think that's a reminder to writers, like you don't have to throw everything in, you know, let the story just be small.
You can save some of your tricks. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.